Hi, this is Drew, and thanks for listening to our podcast. Hopefully, you've been enjoying our show for a while now, but if you're a brand new listener, then the next 50 seconds are not for you, so just go ahead and fast forward a bit. I just wanted to ask our longtime listeners to consider becoming patrons of The Drew Marshall Show, because by throwing us just a few bucks each month, you'll be helping what many tell us is the most brutally authentic spiritual show they've ever heard stay on the air. Look, as loyal podcast listeners, you've been getting the same programming our radio listeners have been hearing live Saturdays 1 to 5 for the last 16 years. Except you get to hear everything commercial-free, you smart consumer, you. Well, because of a brand new arrangement with our studio, our expenses have now gone through the roof. And to be brutally honest, we could use the help to cover those costs. So just before you go to bed tonight, maybe you could stop by our website and click on the giant click here to become a patron sign. And if a whole bunch of you were able to scrounge up like $4 per month, then individually your $4 would have just made a massive difference in helping us cover what it costs to bring you the Drew Marshall Show. Okay, that's it. Sorry to bug you. Now on with the show. I hope you have a good sleep tonight after you become a patron. This is four. This is a song about Andy Graham. Four. Tim just threw up his four fingers. Like, I was trying to think of the artist's name.
Number one.
Sleeping at Last.
Yeah, Sleeping at Last. Sleeping at Last. Sleeping at Last. Thank God. Never mind. Sorry.
Anyway, have a listen to a song about me.
I'm turning out the lights to remember
Let's put that picture of you up now with that song.
You know what I love about this guy? First of all, he's a really good composer. The way he's written these songs are quite...
I've been listening to them.
You listen to the other ones as well? Yep. So this guy, Sleeping at Last, Ryan is his name, has come up with songs based on the Enneagram types. We had him on the show last week. If you want to listen to the interview with him.
Too short. We got to bring him back.
Yeah.
Too short. Your fault.
It's my fault.
I love you.
Anyway,
we'll
get him back, I hope. But I love do you hear the Sufjan Stevens influence kind of thing?
Sure.
Or maybe it's not an influence, but anyway.
Well, we all influence.
So, very talented guy, writes these songs about the different Enneagram types. I read through the lyrics and I started crying on mine. It was just loopy, not cool at all, but anyway.
Well, it was cool.
Crying, but there's no crying in Enneagram.
There's no crying on the Drew Marshall Show.
Baseball. So listen, before we get to our Enneagram guru today, it dawned on me that a lot of people may not have a concise understanding of the Enneagram. What is it? We hear you talking about it all the time. Can you give us a rundown of a little bit of an overview?
Without going into
all the types.
People get confused and worried because one looks like a pentagram, and two,
Myers-Briggs were not a good marketing move.
No, and the whole Myers-Briggs thing, I think it's... To me, it was too complicated. Myers-Briggs, it was so complicated.
Yeah. So here's a brief description of the Enneagram that I found on EnneagramInstitute.com. EnneagramInstitute.com.
The music in the
That's,
background.
No, it's probably too distracting. Okay, right. But I do like that guy's stuff. This is Don Russo and Russ Hudson. It's their stuff on here. We had Russ on the show last year, I think. Anyway, here's the rundown. So from one point of view, the Enneagram can be seen as a set of nine distinct personality types, with each number on the Enneagram denoting one type. It's common to find a little of yourself in all nine types, although one of them should stand out as being closest to yourself. This is your basic personality type. Some people do not have any personalities. I'm just kidding. It doesn't say that. Everyone emerges from childhood with one of the nine types from childhood, dominating their personality, with inborn temperament and other prenatal factors being the main determinants of our type. This is one area where most all of the major Enneagram authors agree. We are born with a dominant type. Subsequently, this inborn orientation largely determines the ways in which we learn to adapt to our early childhood environment. It also seems to lead to certain unconscious orientations toward our parental figures. But why this is so, we still do not know. In any case, by the time children are 4 or 5 years old, their consciousness has developed sufficiently to have a separate sense of self. Although their identity is still very fluid at this age, children begin to establish themselves and find ways of fitting into the world on their own. Thus, the overall orientation of our personality reflects the totality of all childhood factors, including genetics, that influenced its development. So, here are some points, specific points to be made about the basic type itself. Okay, several points can be made about, you know, basic typing itself. Number one, people do not change from one basic personality type to another. In other words, I was a four, I am a four, I will be a four. Along the way, I have gone, hopefully, from being an unhealthy four to an average four to a healthier four.
Can your wings change and influence?
I think I did hear someone say, we'll have to ask our guru in a second, but I think I heard someone say, so wings are like, you have the wing on one side or the other. So if you're four, you could be have a five wing or a three wing.
I'm a nine and a two. Those are my wings, for example.
That doesn't make sense. It's nine or one or nine or eight. There's no two.
There's no...
I don't think...
I thought there was an
Enneagram
save
the hard questions for the guru. Why are you asking me? I'm just reading something somebody else wrote.
There's no crying on the Drew Marshall Show.
We'll get it cleared up in a second. Stop asking questions.
Okay, sorry.
What do you think this is? An informative NPR show or something? People do not change from one personality type to another. The descriptions of the personality types are universal and apply equally to males and females, since no type is inherently masculine or feminine. Next one. Not everything in the description of your basic type will apply to you all the time because you fluctuate, constantly among the healthy, average, and unhealthy traits that make up your personality type. Next one. The Enneagram uses numbers to designate each of the types because numbers are value neutral. They simply imply the whole range of attitudes and behaviors of each type without specifying anything either positive or negative. Now, unlike the labels used in psychiatry, numbers provide an unbiased, shorthand way of indicating a lot about a person without being pejorative. Now, they do have the names, though, like individualist, and the other ones. Enthusiast.
Don't ask me.
Peacemaker. What are you again, Shauna?
Enthusiast,
yeah. That's right.
She says that.
Enthusiast,
whatever.
We'll talk about more about that in a second with the guru. The numerical ranking of the types is not significant. The larger the number is, it doesn't make it any better or worse than a smaller number. It's not better to be a nine than a two because nine is a bigger number. So that's dopey. And then the final point is.
There's number two there.
You shut up.
You said there was no two. It's right there.
No, I'm not saying there is no two. I said
I just can't have a two as a wing?
Yes. That's what I understand. It has to be on one side or the other. So a one or an eight. Maybe I'm wrong.
Really? All right.
Wait for the guru.
Okay.
No type is inherently better or worse than any other. Although I would disagree when it comes to Tim. No type is inherently better or worse than any other. While all the personality types have unique assets and liabilities, some types are often considered to be more desirable than others in any given culture or group. Furthermore, for one reason, and by the way, let me stop there for a second. I'm not happy about being a four because I grew up in a culture of, no drama, no, it doesn't need to be about you, the spotlight shouldn't be on you, it's not about you. We grew up in this sort of the ranch environment.
Yeah, so you're afraid of actually being a millennial snowflake.
Wow. Ooh, that just got deep. Wow. Okay, moving on. Save it for the guru! Furthermore, for one reason or another, you may not be happy being a particular type. You may feel that your type is handicapped. Yep. In different limitations. If some types are more esteemed in Western society than others, like, you know, being an enthusiast or being one of the smart ones.
Einsteinium.
It's because of the qualities that society rewards, not because of any superior values of those types or value of those types. The ideal is to become your best self, not to imitate the assets of another type.
Can we get the guru now?
Please, let's get the guru on the show. Ladies and gentlemen, Wow. Let's try that again.
Man.
Jack Labanauskas.
Yeah.
Well said. Jack Labanauskas. By the way, am I pronouncing your last name right? Labanauskas? Labanauskas?
Well, you sound almost like a Lithuanian.
Yeah. How do you say it?
Labanauskas.
Okay, he's the founder of the Enneagram Monthly, which is an eclectic journal dedicated to intelligent discourse. Then why are you on this show, Jack? About the Enneagram, its current applications and future potential. Since 1995, the Enneagram Monthly is the most internationally respected and referenced focal point of Enneagram development. The website is Enneagram-Monthly.com. Enneagram-Monthly.com. Someone asked me the other day, how do you spell it? So Ennea is E-N-N-E-A, and that's Latin for nine. E-N-N-E-A.
No, it's Greek for nine.
It's Greek for nine is what I meant. Don't wreck a good story with facts, Jack. Well, thank you for joining us. I'm sorry you had to endure that little bit of nonsense there at the start, but boy, do we need your help.
Well, I'm glad, you know, because I just exhausted my Greek.
Yeah. That's it. He only knows one. Why are you into the Enneagram so much? I'm into it because it was one of the very first things to help me finally practice compassionate, non-judgmental self-awareness. Why are you into it?
Well, the way I was introduced was by a friend of mine, John Fujak, in upstate New York. He had he was part of a Buddhist sangha. That's a group of practitioners where we would meet once a week and do meditations and stuff like that. So we were trying to evolve and escape, let's say, the bondage of suffering in life. Right. And in order to do it more effectively, our method was, you know, meditate more and more thoroughly and whatnot. And he went and became one of those lama people that get locked up for 3.5 years to become a Tibetan lama. And he couldn't hack it. After 1.5 years, he came out. And then he says, you know, I couldn't take it. I was too rigorous, too strict. And I want to specifically work on myself. He was a type 4.
Mm.
So he wanted to work on himself so that he wouldn't have to understand all nine types before he could progress into evolution. So I thought, really, you know, that sounds good, a shortcut. My, you know, like, let's have it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm always open to a shortcut. So that was 20-some years ago. And it made perfect sense because if you can take a grip on, if you can really understand what is driving you, then you are in charge.
Yeah.
It's like knowing how to drive a car. You don't have to bang into things. I mean, you can smoothly maneuver through life. So that was the idea that fascinated me, and I started looking at it, and then the first book I read, I could identify just about with every type, because I could see the vices of every type deeply ingrained in me. And you know, like he says, no, there must be one that is really, really, truly dominant. And so eventually I drifted into an area where it was clear that I was a head type, not a gut type or a heart type.
And so not a head case.
I don't know. I mean, that's for others to decide.
Right. So you're a head type. So what type are you?
I would be a 7.
Which, again, is an enthusiast?
Enthusiast, yes.
Is there a better... What are the other labels that 7s get? Because there's a 7 here in the studio, Latin, which seems to be celebrating the fact that there's another 7
and
on the
very
phone.
Very enthusiastically, I must say.
Or is there's a glutton. Glutton, usually. I mean, so it is a voraciousness for everything. It doesn't have to be booze and drugs and rock and roll. It can be... you know, just food. It can be also knowledge. It can be information. It can be adventure, excitement, and absorbing all kinds of impressions. The 7s are supposed to be the one type that has the highest level of certain brain chemistries, like dopamine, norepinephrine, serotonin, etc. So they have an excess of brain chemistry. It makes them very vigorous, restless, and very difficult to focus on one thing. But they get, you know, they get as many things done as other types in the end. But they try 3 times more than others to end up achieving as much as others.
Wow. Wow.
That makes sense?
Yeah. And you've actually applied your personality type to the world of the Enneagram. You are an enthusiastic Enneagram junkie.
Well, the Enneagram, every passion, gluttony, for example, which is the passion of the 7, there's a polarity to it. There's a range. So you go from healthy to unhealthy. So in the case of the seven, it would be the fear of impermanence. If something is going to end, then do I have to look out for the next thing to do. Otherwise, I'm going to run out of stuff, and I'll be bored, I'll suffer. And then there's the sacrifice. So impermanence and sacrifice. Sacrifice means that in order to prevent future pain, you're willing to endure a certain amount of pain now. So I'm publishing this paper for 25 years, That is a sacrifice, but the sacrifice is in service of rendering the Enneagram permanent, in the sense of helping to establish the rules that are governing it in a way that it can be of maximum use to everybody.
Let me ask you this, Jack, and I bring this up because a mutual friend of Tim and I, Tim's the other guy, the other voice in the show here, a mutual friend who shall remain nameless, posted on one of our social media profiles when we said, oh, up next is the Enneagram stuff. He posted ZZZZZZZ, or as in Canada, ZZZZZZZZ, right? So in other words, this is boring. This is boring. And so I would say to Rob Gerber that, okay, it's boring to you. Wow, what a great place to be at in life that you don't need to use a tool like this for a little bit of self-discovery. Because all I can go on is my experience with the Enneagram, and it has revolutionized relationships for me. So what do you say to somebody who has no soul, like Rob Gerber, and when they say, oh, Enneagram, this is boring. What do you say to someone like that? Obviously, you don't try to sell them on it anymore, because why bother?
Well, I can understand some people are content when they find the first thing that makes sense to them and they stop looking deeper.
Yeah, he would say maybe Jesus. Hey, what's your name? Tim. Would he say Jesus? He found Jesus. He doesn't need anything else? Would he say that?
Right.
He goes on cruises. He doesn't need anything
else. He goes on cruises, yeah. Okay, so.
Or they find the new love partner and then they get too busy and, everything else goes out the window.
Okay.
There's 100 reasons for people to quit something that becomes hard because it doesn't give them satisfaction.
Yeah.
And the satisfaction level in the Enneagram, like everything else, I would say in life, is it depends on the level of your expectations that you had to begin with. Mm-hmm. If you thought that this is going to open your eyes and 5 minutes later you're going to be enlightened and you're going to be all-knowing, omniscient, and you're going to walk around like a big shot guru or something, and then it doesn't happen, and you blame the system for not having given you illumination in 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. In contrast, this intern who's not an intern anymore, she's my assistant, came into the studio here. Her name's Shauna. She's fantastic. She's my right-hand man. I'm not sure if I said that right.
Woman.
Right. And she...
Don't you have a law about that in Canada nowadays?
I know. It's illegal to misgender somebody or something.
Okay.
I don't know. But here's the thing. I mentioned that, the Enneagram almost feels like a cult kind of thing as far as I'm concerned. Because I just, I keep talking about it and I've told other people about it. And she said, I think it's a cult too, because the other night I was out drinking with friends at the bar and I made them do the test. She made them do, all of them do the test. So that's the other extreme.
Well, cultism is something that is very popular because, you have those people who dress up like animals, like furries. Strange things can be made into a cult. And every religion in the world has been made into multiple cults.
Yeah, yeah.
So certainly it's a possibility. But the point is, what's the point? Unless you can get a lot of benefit out of the Enneagram, why bother?
Yeah. Yep, fair enough. All right, we are chatting about the Enneagram, as we're going to do during the month of February. And on the line is someone that Chris Hewitz, who was on last week, suggested that we reach out to and connect with, and it's Jack Labanauskas. He's the founder of the Enneagram Monthly. Jack, can you clarify, please, for Tim and I, if your type is a 9, tell me what the wings are. And what wings can you be? Because I understood it that you can only be a wing on either side numerically. So you can, if you're a 9, you can only have an 8 wing or a 1 wing. Is that true or
Correct.
Is that false?
Yes. Yes, as far as the wings go, yes. But let's say the Enneagram, and this is something that people who find the Enneagram boring at some point because they stopped looking into it, there is Oscar Echazo, who was the one that brought it up 40, 50 years ago, the Bolivian psychologist, and he is working with something. He says that we have three instincts. We have gut, heart, and head. And we need all three in order to be a functional human being. If one of them is missing, then we go into a loony bin because we cannot cope with life. Or we are semi-paralyzed and somebody else has to take care of a big portion of our needs. So he says we have a trifix. So in every category, in every area, whether it is head, heart, or gut, we must have all three. So we have a trifix, he calls it, a fixation, or three fixations, one in the head, one in the heart, and one in the gut. So if he is a nine and thinks that he is a two as a wing, it will not be the wing, because the wing will be a one, but his trifix would point him maybe into a two, so he could be a nine, and the way he operates in the heart center is like a two. And the way he operates in the gut center is like a nine. You see what I mean? So then there would be a third type that he has to pick, or that somebody would pick for him, how he operates in the head center. So we must have one type that is the way we use our head, heart, and gut.
Does that clear it up for you?
Yeah, well, what I have a tie. My nine and my two are tied. Like I score high on the score.
Right.
But my nine and the two are completely tied. So I'm not quite sure how that works. I guess that's what I was thinking about the wing thing.
No, that's very common. You could have the one as a wing and the two as your trifix.
Okay. All right. So head, heart, and gut are what I need to be thinking about.
You see, you're a nine, right?
No, I'm a four.
Sorry.
And nine and two are tied.
So you're saying nine and two are tied when it come to doing the test, and
yes,
they came in second.
But the exact same scores.
Right.
Well, it depends what the test is. I mean, most tests, like the Don Riso Hudson test, is about 144 questions. And often there's at least half a dozen questions that you answer, and you're scratching your head and you say, I could have answered it the other way. If you asked me yesterday, I would have said the other way.
Right.
If you ask me today, I'm going to say this. And that one point can make a 1, 2, 3 point difference.
Okay.
So
maybe I'll take the test again.
If you take the test again, you get the same questions. You can take a different test, but I mean, people usually take every test they can get, and then the majority wins in the end. It's a democratic process.
Right. Let me ask you this. We didn't talk about this when we spoke the other day, Jack, but what don't you like about the Enneagram?
Oh, God. I would like it to be more defined in a way that is verifiable in some kind of a scientific or physical way. Some concrete evidence of type that would make it easier for people to decide, because if people sometimes, if they mistype themselves, they can go off in the wrong direction for a while. And that while can be long. I started out, I thought I was a type 5. And for about a year or a year and a half, I was convinced to be a type 5. And then somebody started saying, no, your energy doesn't seem like a 5. You're more like a 7. And then I had confirmations like from Echazo himself, from Naranjo, from Riso. Riso thought I was a 5, by the way. I mean, so I interviewed all the Enneagrammers in the world, basically. Anybody who was anybody, I interviewed, and they were in the paper. And the consensus was that I ended up being a 7. And that's been holding for 20-some years. Now, am I certain? Hell no. One day somebody may come along, and really open my eyes, because we have a way of avoiding our own type because it is sometimes too painful to acknowledge who we are. So the demon in us is hiding, and he's good at it. Hmm. So we have to be careful, we should never be absolutist in the sense that we made a conclusion it's ironclad, we will not change it come hell or high water. We should be open.
Yeah.
And stay open.
Yeah. Tim?
Yeah, I'm going to make a comparison here, which will lead to the question. I'm a high school teacher, and there's something that, you know, we studied. There's a gentleman named Gardner, and he came up with these things about multiple intelligences, that people operate well as, you know, physical or intellectual or musical and so on and so forth. They started out with, I think, 7 of them, and then after a while, an 8th one sort of appeared. Do you think, have numbers been added? Will it become a teniagram someday, or are we pretty much, this is it?
A decagram.
Yeah. Well, I thought teniagram kind of rhymed, so.
Yeah.
Will there, do you think other numbers will be added, or is this it?
No, I think the system is viable if it is used as the system was designed to do. It's like using a screwdriver. You don't want to use it on a nail.
Right.
You want a hammer for a nail.
Right.
So depending what it is that you're trying to define, you have to use the appropriate system. And the Enneagram is traditionally speaking, we're speaking of 7 deadly sins, or those passions that in Christianity are 7 deadly sins. And we have deceit and fear, making it 9. So those... Ponticus Evagrius in the 4th century, the Syrian Egyptian monks, they were using, you know, 9 types, not 9 passions. They would escape into the desert in order not to be tempted, avoid temptation and such like, you know, and they were very preoccupied with their own passions that would keep him away from God. So that was the idea at the time. And that has stood uncorrected, let's say, for a couple thousand years. And older than that, the Indian system of Vedic astrology, for example, they're talking about 9, you know, the number 9 is the main, you know, main number that is the foundational number of Vedic astrology. And Tesla, the marvelous inventor of everything that we use today as technology, he said, if you understand 3, 6, and 9, then you will have access to a completely new technology that puts everything to shame that we have learned so far. So there seems to be something, some people say that the 3, 6, and 9 are the numbers that are coming out of divinity, and also mathematically, they work in a different way than the other 6 numbers.
Hmm.
With the other, you know, the other 6 numbers, they are about the world, and these 3 about the divinities that are guiding the world. So, I mean, this is a bit too esoteric, but I mean, the Enneagram is a very, very profound, deep system, and there's a lot to learn about it, and there's a lot of a lot of truth that is underlying, that is not understood, and it is not really taught. What we're taught about is the practical things that we have access to. For example, relationships. If you know the Enneagram type of the person you're relating to, and the person knows yours, then you have, or let's say in psychotherapy, you're a shrink, and somebody is clearly a type. You immediately know a lot about that person and where they come from,
right?
Which would take you hours and tons of money for that other person to afford before you could know all that stuff. So it's a tremendous shortcut in understanding who the other is, and also it helps you to avoid pitfalls.
Yeah, that is one of the main things I like about the Enneagram, is that all these other sort of find yourself programs out there, very few of them will willingly, in a celebrated way, point out your skid marks to you. But the Enneagram will basically also say to you, yeah, you know what, or shadow side, or, you know, everyone's got a gift and everyone has a backside to their gifts. And the Enneagram points out the shadow side of us quite nicely.
Exactly. Yeah. And if you have a shadow side, then you know that you have all passions, all possible passions. they're available to you, and there's maybe one of them that is dominant. But whether it is healthy or unhealthy, it is like a polarity. So the shadow side, as you said, for example, for type 1, which is the perfectionist, you have security and sensitivity. So they are each other's opposite poles.
Keep going with those just for a second, if you don't mind. What about 2? By the way, just keep using the descriptors, please.
Okay, the 2 would be freedom and intimacy.
But what is a 2 again?
Type 2, the giver.
Giver, okay. Giver, helper, that kind of thing. Okay, so, and you're saying...
Yeah. The 3 then would be impersonalization.
But what type is the 3 again, for our listeners?
3 would be the achiever.
Okay.
And impersonalization and self-interest.
And these things are what to them?
These are the polarities between which they fluctuate. So the deceit is, they can be self-interested and do whatever it takes in order to further their own interest.
Yep, met them.
And or on the other side, they would be impersonalization. That means they would be cold, like I don't know, Mr. Spock in
Star Trek.
What do you call it?
Yeah, Star Trek.
Star Trek. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, 4. Uh oh. Be gentle.
Four
be gentle.
Would be the, I know. I have to. You know, this is minefield area.
Yeah.
Tiptoes.
Yeah.
Tiptoes.
So the type of a 4 is the enthusiast or the.
No, it's the romantic.
Oh, sorry, I mean, jeez, I don't even know my own type. Sorry, the individualist or also known as?
Individualist or romantic or artist. There's 4s have, of course, the most denominations because they're usually very good writers. Because they have, they're always malcontent and they want to improve, so they edit themselves, etc., and... Anyway, they fluctuate between disorientation and a feeling of entitlement or claim. So envy is supposed to be the passion of the 4, but it's not an envy where you want something that somebody else has. You are pissed off because hey, wait a minute, why don't I have that as well? You don't want it from them. You want it on your own. So you want to claim.
Yeah, and we're not talking about stuff. We're talking about, for example, there are so many people I know who just have this constant peace, and they drive me nuts because I don't even know how to spell constant peace.
Right.
So
that's a good example.
Yeah.
That's a good example. So you resent what they have, and you don't want to take it away from them, but you wouldn't mind having it yourself.
Yeah. I can hear all the listeners saying, well, you just need Jesus. Yeah. Okay, yep.
Okay, then, and on the opposite would be the unmoored feeling, the disorientation. So imagine you're on a boat in a wavy water, and you cut the anchor cord. And then when your security is removed, you don't know where you're going. I mean, you have no control. So you're disoriented.
Yeah, okay, yep.
That's a 4. Then the 5 would be, they call them the observer, you usually small of build, highly alert, eggheads, studious, specializing in something or other.
The researcher.
Weird sort of researchers. With an eye on the microscope, etc. So their polarity would be distrust and certitude. So they oscillate between distrust and certitude.
I wonder if Gord's that.
Well, he's definitely the egghead.
Sorry, we have a mutual friend. We're throwing him under the Enneagram bus. Okay, yes, next.
Okay, then the 6, the detective or the cop or the soldier, so it would be the trooper, basically. They call them also six packs in jargon. They like group activities and stuff like that. For a head type, they're very relational with others also. So for them, the polarity is attack or surrender. So the counterphobic one would attack because they're afraid, not because they feel powerful or something they want to take over. They want to prevent that the other one will be able to attack them, and they would have to surrender. So their fear is surrender, and their mode is to attack.
Okay, seven?
Seven is the enthusiast, and the dread of the seven is impermanence, and the polarity is sacrifice. Sacrifice and impermanence.
The seven in the room is nodding. Okay. Eight?
Eight is usually the passion is excess.
What's the typing again?
The boss.
So the eight is known as the boss?
Yeah. Number eight is the boss. And their passion is excessiveness. Lust also. Mm-hmm. So they have a lot of physicality about them. Okay, so the eight, the boss, they can ignore details and small little refineries, and they go for the big goals, and therefore they will be undeterred. So for them, the dilemma, the polarity, would be supremacy or submission. They're very, very protective of their little ones, their inner family environment, etc. And they have usually issues with authority and submission. So,
they're a bit of a challenger.
Yes, challenger, yeah.
Okay.
Because their option, they think they have to either submit or to dominate.
Okay, all right.
Nine?
Yeah, nine.
Nine would be the diplomat, so it would be sloth and laziness is their passion, and the polarity goes between lethargy and hyperactivity. So actually, they're like the the laws of nature, where an object that is in motion will stay in motion until it is stopped by something else. So the lethargy is they either fall asleep, or they become hyperactive and they can't stop acting. Like children, when they get overtired and they can't sleep anymore. Then they stay up and, annoy all the grown-ups.
That still happens to Tim.
Yes, I annoy everybody.
Well, it's funny. We have these big, long interview times. A lot of interviews are like 5-10 minutes on a lot of stations, but we're long format. And I'm looking at the clock going, where did that go? Like, we didn't even talk about half the stuff we said we were going to talk about, Jack.
Well, we started late because of hockey.
That's right. That's right. Well, look, this guy is worth following, and the Enneagram Monthly is worth subscribing to. The Enneagram-Monthly.com is the website, Enneagram-Monthly.com. And this is sort of, it's really the hub of the Enneagram world. Is that fair to say, Jack?
Oh, yeah, it's very accurate, and it's with and without hyphen. We have both domains.
Oh, yeah, both. Okay, sorry, I should have looked into that. My apologies.
Okay, it's all right.
Yeah.
Okay, and we don't subscribe to any particular school, so we publish all people who have good ideas about the Enneagram, no matter where they come from, and sometimes enemies, intellectual sort of sparring partners, etc. So
sure.
They all can be in the same paper. And if possible, I try to put them one on the front page and the other one on the back of it. So they can't be separated and tear it out and throw one away and eat the other.
Very tricky of you, Jack. Very tricky. You are a great communicator. I really appreciate you being one of our Enneagram gurus this year. We'll talk about this, for as long as I do the show, because it's been that revolutionary in my life. So to Rob Gerber, I say na-na-na boo-boo. Yeah. Jack, thank you for your time. I look forward to meeting you maybe one of these days.
Sure. Okay.
Okay, bye. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Yeah. Sometimes people say, I look forward to meeting you too.
Yeah.
But not Jack.
Yeah, just not swearing.
Jack, sure. I like that.